ebook publisher and marketing service company, Just Imagine It, Inc. presents. Get behind me. Now, stay there. Your favorite fun-filled, informative art and entertainment podcast. Available on iTunes, PRX, Podbean, and right here locally in the great Pacific Northwest on KSKQ 89.5 FM Ashland, Oregon. Art and entertainment news and views that you want to know. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audio Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $9.99 per month. And be sure to check out our wonderful book rental program, Fantastic Books for People on the Go. That's downpour.com.
In this episode, we love the New Zealand band Ivy Blue. Guess what? Their new album just dropped. 1G takes us in a different direction with his new rap album out of Florida, and Black Wave is read by Carrington McDuffie in our downpour.com special feature right after the news you want to know.
All I am is a man. I want the world in my
Charlie Stanton.
I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Carson Bench.
And I'm Jerry Renfro. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. So anyway, with all things old being new again, I wanted to talk about the return of The X-Files to television.
All right, let's talk about it.
Yeah, so the first episode debuted recently, and it scored 21.4 million viewers when you include DVR playbacks and streaming. And interestingly enough, I thought streaming was going to be a huge chunk. It only accounted for 1.1 million. So that means that there's roughly 20 million people that watched it on television. So that's huge in this day and age.
Can I interject that? You know why I think their streaming was so low?
Why?
Because their audience is the age where there wasn't streaming and
that's
there
true.
Wasn't computers.
We watched it on television.
That's
right.
Good old-fashioned TV.
Yeah. It scored a 7.8 rating among adults 18 to 49.
That's
which
me.
That's me. behind only AMC's The Walking Dead. So it's actually, Fox pointed out that it was bigger than the average of the most watched season of the show originally. The most watched episode was from season 5, the original run, and this debut beat that. So
yeah, you know what the fascinating is that, you know, when Jerry was just saying, it just reminded me that the statistic from the studios was that their opening debut for the new series, the reboot, more people watched it than watched the season finale.
By 24%
of a very popular show.
Isn't that amazing? Because you think about, like, you always hear about, like, you know, the final episode of MASH and the final episode of Cheers and, you know, the huge numbers that these draw. And the final episode of X-Files did well. But then to see it come, and you know what? I don't even know if this counts as a reboot because it's the same character. So it's really just like, we're taking a 20-year break. We'll see you in 20 years.
Here's something about that 20-year break and coming back 20 years. Okay. Now, I never really watched the show very much. Originally, I was, of course, aware of it.
Right.
And kind of, so correct me if I'm wrong, but Mulder was an agent that, like, he believed that there's some weird stuff going on, but Scully was
very skeptical.
I mean, is she still skeptical? I mean, about aliens at this point?
After the movie with the aliens.
Her name is Gillian Anderson, and she's not too skeptical about the show. As a matter of fact, I saw her and David Duchovny being interviewed on a Stephen Colbert, Fallon, one of those.
And they were real high on a movie and stuff like that, right? And he asked him, her and him, like in his normal fashion, Steve Colbert, you know, kind of an attack mode, right?
Yeah.
He goes, is there anything with the whole project that just put you off? You know, that you're just like, you know, this might be a deal breaker?
Uh-huh.
Or did they just cater to you because they wanted it back on, right? And then Gillian Anderson says, because there was only one hiccup in it for me. And then the company was completely unaware. And he goes, what was the problem? She goes, you got paid twice as much as me.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Really?
And then they go, no way. And then so Colbert and stuff, they looked it up and that is, you know, she got paid 50% less than he did.
On the previous show, on the previous run.
No, on the new one.
Are you serious?
Oh, man.
How the heck does that happen?
That's a travesty.
The studios justified it that nobody knows who Gillian Anderson is anymore, but everybody knows who David Duchovny is.
Yeah, he has done a lot of stuff.
Because he did Californication, and he's always been on there, so he's a bigger draw. Which is another reason why Mike and Molly, that show that a lot of people like, they canceled it because it's going to be his fifth season. Their contract's over with, and they said they're not going to renew them, even though it's a hit show. Because they don't want to get in negotiation with Melissa McCarthy, because now that she's a big movie star, she's going to want a lot of money, and they're not going to pay that kind of money for a sitcom anymore.
Yeah. Not in this day and age. You know, if this was 1995, it would be a totally different situation. You're right. And I don't even know. I didn't see any interviews with her. I don't even know if she wanted to keep. I think she did probably want to keep doing it. I know Billy Gardell was cool with
it. No, she said she wanted to do it.
And it's a good show. Yeah,
and she liked doing it, and she was surprised it got canceled. And they just told her the truth. It's financial. You're a big movie star now.
It's true.
I mean, more money.
In the last 15 years since X-Files left, I mean, Gillian Anderson has been almost non-existent, but David Duchovny has had a number of, you know, success. I mean, he was in Zoolander. He was, you know, he had Californication, like you said.
Yeah.
You know, he's been in the public consciousness. So, I mean, I kind of understand it from that perspective. I don't know.
Who's a bigger star?
You know, he's definitely a bigger star.
The new X-Files, right? We reboot and we use somebody different than Gillian Anderson. We use Jennifer Lawrence or somebody else.
Right.
You know? Is it going to make a difference? No, we can get away with it. Mm. If we do a new reboot and we take out David Duchovny and we just put another guy in there, like Carson Bench, is it going to make a difference? Yeah, it's going to, because David Duchovny is the star. He's the one that's drawing people in.
Yeah.
Well, I feel curious. I've never seen it before, so after hearing the dialogue here, I feel tempted.
You've never seen The X-Files?
I don't tell anyone, but
Oh, wow.
I've seen other X things. All, but,
There's some good episodes.
I'm sorry, you're on the list.
It was kind of like a successor. It was a Twilight Zone. You know, there was like all these creepy things happening. Uh-huh. And it was well done. I really liked it. When the show ended, they tried to do a spinoff with a couple of ancillary characters. And it only lasted a couple episodes. So it really was. Yeah. I really felt like it was a real zeitgeist kind of thing. Like it was a time and place. So I'm actually moderately surprised by the success of the reboot. Mm-hmm. I really thought it's like Twin Peaks, you know, they're bringing that back too. And I really felt like those really just felt like the 90s, like that was such a 90s thing. I'm surprised it's doing it well. Hey, power to them.
Are they going to bring Friends back?
I don't know.
You know what? That's funny because there was a Friends sort of reunion.
Yeah, with all the Big Bang Theory people.
Yeah, yeah. They were all there except for Matthew Perry.
Because he was in London.
Because he was in London. And so he says.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I heard somebody say the other day that Friends, you know, at this point, they could just call it That 90s Show.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I used to love that show. You know, every now and again, if I catch it, you know, sometimes it's funny, sometimes you watch a show like, you know, that you watched 20 years ago or 10 years ago, and it just seems like, why did I watch that? Why was I so fascinated about this?
Uh-huh.
You know? A
different time in your life.
You know what I mean? It's just like, you know, you go back to what, you know, you do what you do. You might try a few things and maybe you'll excel at some. Just
go back to what works.
Yeah, I'll leave you with this. You know what the parallel that reminds me of is Leonard Nimoy with Star Trek. You know, when Star Trek was a big hit in the late 60s and he wanted to do other things and he wrote a book called I Am Not Spock, and he really rebelled. He didn't want to have anything to do with conventions, nothing. Like, he wanted to just bury it in the past. And then a certain amount of time goes by and he realizes, you know, that, hey, there's still this huge demand. People love it. And he wrote another book years later, 20 years later, probably, called I Am Spock, you know, and he really embraced it, you know, and it's like, okay, this is my thing. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. If, you know, people love what you're doing, you know, you don't have Michael Jordan running, you know, 2 years of his best playing years to go play baseball. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, you're good at something. There's nothing wrong with just going with it.
Right. Yeah, the Spock thing was better than his song about Bilbo Baggins.
I love that thing. I've seen that probably 20 times on YouTube. I don't know why it's like a train wreck. I keep watching it over and over again. But I know some better music is coming Coachella this year.
Yeah, Coachella. Coachella is a festival they have out in San Bernardino County, which is huge if you've ever been out there. And I know a lot of you have. It's out there in the middle of the desert. And it started up just like a Lollapalooza and a lot of Ozfest and
Crew Fest. Or Sundance.
And Sundance. So, you know, all these things, they make festivals out of them, right? And Coachella, you know, it's got the room and you can make as much noise as you want. Because there ain't nobody around her. It's like going to Burning Man. You know, mm-hmm. They build their own little city, and that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. But Guns N' Roses is going to headline Coachella.
What? Get out of town.
Yeah, Guns N' Roses has announced that they are going to headline Coachella in 2016. Okay? And not only are they going to headline, it is going to be the original Guns N' Roses.
That's what first thing I was wondering.
Yes, yeah. Including members Axl Rose and Slash.
Together again.
Wow.
And they did a thing, and they were talking to Axl Rose about it, and he said, yeah. He goes, no. He goes, yeah, everything's fine. We're going to headline. And then we're going to Vegas, and we're going to do month-long shows in Vegas. He goes, and we'll take it from there and see what happens, if we can still stand each other by then. And, you know, they asked him, you know, well, you know, the big hassle was always between him and Slash, right?
Yeah.
And because they both were very creative and very talented, you know, so eventually they were going to clash over, you know, who's better.
Artistic direction. And,
yeah, like, yeah. You know, yeah. Anyway, they spent, you know, the next 20 years not talking to each other.
Yeah, I never thought I'd see the day.
Right? Mm. And, like, you know, Axl Rose would go as far as to say, like, you know, when he's playing his Guns N' Roses, because he kept the right to the name Guns N' Roses, because he wrote most of the songs. Mm. So it reverted to him. And so, you know, he'd go out with a different band, his Guns N' Roses. He's a singer, right? And he would say... He would let people from the old band come up and play with them if they were in town, right? But he would never let Slash, even if he was in town, come on stage. Yeah. He goes, I don't want him on stage with me. I don't want him anywhere near me.
Sounds like it could be some sort of reality show or something.
Well, no, it seems like a brotherly thing because they used to live together, you know, and when they were kids and, you know, the whole thing. Then they got real super famous, super rich, and, you know, everybody's ego exploded. But anyway, he just says that, you know, how did it happen? And he goes, Slash called me up. And he goes, I'm surprised he has your number. And he goes, why wouldn't he have my number? You know, he goes, he's known me almost his whole life. You know, and he goes, he called me up. He goes, and then they switch over to Slash because he happened to be sitting there with him. And he goes, you know, there's no reason in the world for us not to talk. You know, and we made a huge success around the world, and all the things that we fought over are so petty. I don't even remember what they were about.
Well, that's encouraging that they were able to do that. And
yeah.
Coachella, the festival sounds really interesting because it makes me want to go. The other performers are going to be Ellie Goulding, Sufjan Stevens, who I love, Ice Cube, Sia, and A$AP Rocky. I mean, that's awesome. I think we should go.
I think we should go too, man. I really do. I mean, I would love to. Oh, yeah. Look, at going to Coachella, man, you know, it's going to be like a once-in-a-lifetime experience for a lot of people. And they're going to see Guns N' Roses, the original lineup. And, you know, how many cell phones are going to be out there taking pictures and recording videos at Coachella? What do you think?
Probably 90% of the people will be holding the phone up over
there. I was going to say, yeah, if you're too far back, all you see is the blur.
I'm pretty sure there's going to be one less than there would have been.
Oh, it must be rough being a kid these days.
Oh, my God. Social media alone just makes – I wouldn't want to be a kid now.
Dude, keep it up. They give out Apple mini pads.
Wow.
Well, maybe I do want to be a kid.
Actually, yeah. All of a sudden.
There's definite benefits to it. I mean, no doubt. Well, you know, Facebook, you know, talking about social media, you know, we talk about Facebook a lot. Charlie and I are both fans of Facebook, the company. Mm-hmm. We follow their financials, and we like Mark Zuckerberg. You know, he's a good dude. So Facebook has taken the literal, or I guess the figurative, shot across the bow at Twitter, which is crazy to me because they're already so much bigger than Twitter, but they want to get bigger. So Facebook has announced a new series called the Facebook Sports Stadium. And I know you're a sports guy. I'm somewhat of a sports guy. This is kind of interesting. So Twitter is very popular during high pace, fast-paced sporting events, you know, because you can get those tweets out really fast. Right. Like, oh, you know, call, you know, ball on the 42. Oh, yeah. It's overturned, you know, that, stuff like that. So Facebook is trying to create this thing called the Sports Stadium that basically does that kind of that same thing and gives sports fans a platform for real-time instant commentary and analysis about games. So considering Facebook's size, the just sheer number of people, and their infrastructure, which is very good, they got a good chance of, I think, stealing people away from Twitter to use this new service because you get basically everything that you get out of Twitter and then some.
Well, you know what? I don't think they're trying to do anything with Twitter. I don't think they really even care about Twitter. You know, I mean, to be honest with you, I think they're doing it to expand their own business.
Yeah.
And they see what's successful, what other people are doing. And they're like, yeah, we could do that. You know, and it's not, I don't think it's going to take people away from Twitter, you know, because one, they got to work the bugs out. And two, I think people will eventually go to Sports Stadium or whatever they decide to call it because Facebook's going to be that much better.
Yeah.
Because one, it's all over the world. Two, their technology and infrastructure, it makes Twitter look like a tin can and string.
Exactly.
You know?
That's exactly what
And the thing is that they're doing live streaming now. Like, you know, HBO comes out with a new show or Showtime comes out with a new show or the season premieres and stuff like that. You can watch all those on Facebook now.
Yeah.
They're showing the first show on everything, right? But that's it. They only show the premiere. And then, you know, and if people want to sign up, they can sign up.
Deserves, yeah.
But they're just expanding their universe, man, to where they are not only, just adding more features, which every technological company is doing as they, you know, come available. The thing that's made them so successful is that they're giving back at the same time that they are taking in. Just like KSKQ, community radio. Yeah, we may have a lot of different styles and a lot of different people, but we're giving the community a nice diverse look at, you know, what's going on, what people are listening to, you know, and this and that, right?
Well, Facebook did something that I thought was really nice. I really appreciated. They made a little video for me.
I saw that. I showed up in a couple
slideshow of pictures. And it's like, you know, I forgot about that.
Well, I think it would be interesting if not only do they do the sports stadium feature, but they kind of take that and put it in other creative ways, such as like if there were an awards show that people, they were watching and people wanted to give their reactions the like, Grammys. Oh, look at her dress, or like a concert or something.
They already are doing that. They have plans for all that already.
They do?
Yeah. They're already going to do concert series. And you can stream them live. You can stream Coachella live.
Ooh. Yeah, they're really targeting
real time. You can send money through Facebook now. They don't charge for it. Huh. You can do video chatting through Facebook. They don't charge for it.
It sounds virtual, like we're kind of just stepping into our screens and this reality doesn't exist.
Right, what it is, they're just building on their platform because there has to be, like, either that or they're going to turn into MySpace. They were real popular for a while and then nobody even remembers who they are. Yeah. So to keep your business going, you have to come up with new ideas. Or keep your radio show going, you play new music so, you know, people experience it, you know, and come back to listen to you, see what's new. And I think that's what they're doing. But I like the idea that they're giving away billions and billions and billions of dollars to charity, and they've given free internet access to 17 countries and didn't charge anybody for them just to improve the quality of their life. And, you know, it's like Zuckerberg said, he goes, showing people where the good, clean drinking water is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Showing people where the doctor is the right thing to do. So he goes, I don't mind doing it.
He has a social conscience, using his money to help society be better.
Yeah, and check this out, man. The guy is 29 years old, okay? Mark Zuckerberg just passed up Jeff Bezos, owner of Amazon. He's richer than he is.
Wow.
And he has done all this. He's now the third richest man in the world behind Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, and he's done it in under 10 years.
And he's under 30.
And he's under 30.
Yeah.
Do you think it's that amazing. He was always so socially conscious, you know, when he first started?
I think that's deep-rooted. I think somewhere in his upbringing, that was one of his values he was taught to give back.
Well, I hope they may not have been doing it with an eye on doing something to Twitter, but I hope they do because that's just
It might even be better for them if let somebody like Facebook or Google Plus, you know, absorb them and say, yeah, we'll take your business.
Well, if Twitter goes down, can we just start calling the pound sign the pound sign again?
Yeah, maybe.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Hashtag.
Hashtag Jerry Renfro.
Well, 70s fashion is kind of on the rebound, I think, is it not?
Yeah, and there is a really interesting way of being able to see it, and it's in the form of a new drama series that's coming out on HBO. It's called Vinyl, Martin Scorsese is the executive producer, and the other creators are Mick Jagger, Angel, Rich Cohen, and Terrence Winter.
Oh, wow.
And the series stars the main character as a record executive in the 70s. It's interesting because there's a preview video right now that's posted on HBO, and it's the caption for it, it says, "Crime, drugs, sex, guns, madness." Wow. Like, okay, that summarizes it.
Everything.
Yeah.
And, it's got it all.
Yeah. And one of the most fascinating elements in the whole show is the costuming, because they went to great lengths to have it be authentic 70s clothing. It turns out part of the reason is that Martin Scorsese is, he also directed the pilot. He said he basically is really passionate about fashion. His parents worked in the garment district and instilled in him a fascination with fashion from the very beginning. The importance that he puts on costume is especially felt in the series, and it gives it a really genuine look. It's really meticulous. So, you know, the recent deaths of David Bowie and Glenn Frey, they certainly bring up 70s fashion and rock nostalgia. So New York City in the 70s, which is where Vinyl is set, is really a mashup of styles. Scorsese says that people related to clothing differently back then. There was the glam kids with the sequins, spangles, and feather boas, the dress-down look of the punks, and then the mob guys with the silk suits.
Yeah.
And, lots of polyester going on all around. So John Dunn is the costume designer for the series. Interesting thing. He said that the platform shoes were the hardest things to find.
Really?
Yeah. He said that they were the gold standard they are the gold standard now, since they were only in fashion for 2 years. And they found authentic costumes for the series. So they went to great lengths. They found it. They went to vintage stores, all sorts of stuff. And then he also constructed it. So I think it's going to be really fun for young people too, who weren't around then. There's a young staff on the production team, and they were bedazzled by all the costume.
That's a great story, Maya, and I love the thing about fashion, right? You know, I was gonna say, well, if they wanted 70s fashion, all they had to do was open up Mick Jagger's closet.
Yeah.
I would love to go explore his closet.
Yeah,
1977. YouTube video of the Eagles performing. Glenn Frey is, to me, the coolest looking guy ever.
Do you remember what the 70s was wearing?
It was all about the facial hair and the
he had long hair and a big beard. Mm-hmm. And he was, singing Life in the Fast Lane.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the thing about this Vinyl. Now, I've looked into it, right? It's of course, it's according to Jagger, right? He also did the movie about James Brown. For HBO.
Oh, okay.
So that's his gig. That's
so cool that
now.
He has that strength.
Yeah, he's a director and producer, and he does that in between Stones stuff, right? And they were asking him about it, and he goes, "Well, I wanted to make it as authentic as possible." He goes, "Of course, I was there." He goes, "Scorsese was there." He goes, "So, we know pretty much what we're looking for, And he said, when the promo, what you mentioned, about, sex, drugs, madness, danger, whatever, he goes, "That's how it was, man." That's exactly how it was. And then they asked him, what the content was going to be like, because you think it's going to be, that just described the Rolling Stones, right? And he said, no. He goes, the Stones? He goes, no. He goes, we purposely wrote them out. There's no footage of me or anybody from the Rolling Stones. He goes, we're not using the Stones. We're not using the Beatles. He goes, because those are the two biggest bands, and we're not associated. He goes, what we are using is bands from the 70s that were big, had big hits, but weren't, didn't have staying power.
Nice.
So he goes, instead of using the Stones, he goes, I elected to use the New York Dolls.
Oh, good choice.
Nice.
He goes, because they have a sound similar to us, and they were huge in the 70s. He goes, I was at, Studio 54 with Bowie and all these guys all the time, Freddie Mercury, whatever. He goes, and the New York Dolls, they were the thing.
Never heard of them.
They were a glam rock band, Kiss.
Mm-hmm.
Before that. Except they used to dress up not in drag, but wear like a lot of,
glitter?
Yeah, glitter, stuff like David Lee Roth would wear on stage,
Tight pants?
Yeah, spandex, stuff like that.
In my opinion, it was the pinnacle of rock music. And all sorts of rock music.
Yeah.
Album rock reigned. The artists were given a lot of opportunities to be creative by the studios. I mean, the music was happening then. There's nothing that is coming out now with the exception of some electronic music. But even then, okay, you know what's the only thing that is new, in my opinion, that didn't happen in the 70s? No, I take that back. Even rap music was going on in the 70s. But if you listen to what was happening with the krautrock, the electronic music that was coming out, some of the stuff you wouldn't even believe was coming out in the 70s. I'm telling you, it was the pinnacle of sound as well. Analog sound, the type of speakers and all of that.
Yeah, when you think about the acts in the 70s, okay, so let's think about, you know, what were the biggest acts in the 70s?
Kiss, Alice Cooper.
Alice Cooper was probably the biggest act in the 70s.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to say Foghat.
They were hugely popular in the 70s.
Right.
You know? But those then they were all big stadium bands. I mean, the bands that were popular in the 70s were like Styx and, you know, and
Kansas.
And the Cars and stuff like that, you know. That didn't leave a long-lasting impression, but wrote some good songs, you know. But I like the fact that Jagger's not using his own band to toot his own whistle. He's like, no, this is about the 70s and about what was going on. And I love his choice of the New York Dolls because we use the New York Dolls instead of the Stones.
I love that quote where he says, you know, he talks about I lived it. This is probably the first time they've had to tone down reality for television. You know, usually television and movies, they like have to hype up reality. Yeah. This is probably where they had to go, no, we can't use that. Nope, we can't. No, that's way too crazy. Nobody can believe that happened. First off, let me get something off my chest. I can't stand it when people call him Marty. Because he's either Martin Scorsese or Mr. Scorsese. I don't think anybody should be allowed to call him Marty except like his nephew. That's number one.
Who's calling him Marty?
Tillinger Koskoff. I don't know who you are, Tillinger Koskoff, but you should not be calling him Marty. Second thing is I love this cast. This is really Bobby Cannavale, Olivia Wilde, Ray Romano as a sleazy studio exec.
You know that's gonna be good.
Look at Mike Myers. You would not have expected that. I bet you there's people going, Ray Romano, man. I'll bet you he kills it. And
not
then Juno Temple
Ray.
and James Jagger, one of Mick's many, many offspring. So I think this thing's going to be awesome.
Speaking of offsprings and the Rolling Stones, okay? We, you know, for some propensity, the Rolling Stones seem to love the ladies everywhere they go, you know? And they
the
have
ladies
this trail.
Love them.
And they love these, they have these trail of kids everywhere they go, man. I mean, Jagger's got 9 kids, you know? And, you know, I've actually met his son, Lucas, at the airport with me and Sarah. And Sarah innocently said to Lucas, she goes, why is everybody yelling at your dad? He goes, I don't know. Because people were stopping by going, man, can I get your autograph? He just happened to be sitting on the plane waiting to get on, you know?
Well, so speaking of the Rolling Stones and children, Ronnie Wood.
Yes.
He is 68 years old and not shooting blanks. He's gonna have a baby with his 37-year-old wife, Sally Humphries.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Man. A spokesperson for the Rolling Stones said that Sally and Ronnie Wood are delighted to announce they are expecting twins, June 2016. Needless to say, they are thrilled and overjoyed at the wonderful news. The spokesperson also said the twins will be the couple's first children together, with Ronnie having 4 children from previous marriages. He has a son, Jesse, who is married to Fern Cotton. With first wife Chrissy Findlay, as well as Leah and Tyrone, who with his second wife Joe, those children are there, as well as Leah and Tyrone with his second wife Joe. He also adopted her son Jamie. Ronnie and Sally dated for 6 months before getting married in December 2012 at the Dorchester Hotel. In July 2014, Sally told the Telegraph, "It'd be nice to have children with Ronnie," explaining, "Obviously, we've spoken about it quite a lot, and you can ask him what his response would be, and he would say, well, that'd be nice. He's up for it." He's got a lot of friends that are older who have younger children, and they all say it's fantastic and it keeps you young. I do think that would be wonderful, but I don't know if it'll happen. I hope so. Well, it did happen. So congratulations to Ronnie and Sally, the twins. Ronnie Woods, if you didn't know, before the Rolling Stones, he was in a band called Faces with Rod Stewart. Before that, he played bass for Jeff Beck, and he got started originally in 1964. He was a member of the Byrds.
Wow.
Yeah, he's been around, and I like him. He's a funny guy, you know. I've seen him interviewed, and it's like he was Oh, no, it was so funny because Ronnie Wood came into the studio, right? He came into the studio to talk to Howard Stern. This was like at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning, right, when they taped the show. So he comes in the morning, and here comes, you know, Ron Wood, and they always film it, and then walking down the hall, you know, you ready? And he's like, yeah, I'm ready, get out of my way, right? And so he comes in, and he sits down, and Howard's over there, who's the health nut, right? He doesn't drink or smoke or any of that stuff. And Ron Wood comes in, and he sits down, and he's smoking his cigarette, and he's drinking this big pint of Guinness or something like that, right? And he goes, oh, man, look at you. You are a rock star. He goes, dude, it's 9 o'clock in the morning. You're smoking and drinking. You know? And he goes, it might be 9 o'clock in the morning for you, Howard. But, you know, he goes, I've been up all night. You know, and when you think about it, that's the lifestyle they lead. You know,
yeah.
They record at night. They do their concerts at night, you know, and things like that. But then he says, he's talking to him, and he made this comment. It was so funny, you know, because you mentioned Rod Stewart. He had some great hits with Stewart too. They were really good together. You know, Stay With Me and all that stuff. Anyway, he goes. They asked him about, you know, how do you like playing guitar in Rolling Stones? He's like, fine. Get along with everybody fine. And he goes, who's better, you or Keith? You know, and he goes, Keith says he's better, but we all know it's me. He goes, all you got to do is watch this on stage. You know, he's got the persona, so people are looking at him. But when you want to hear where the sound's coming from, it's either coming from me or Mick Taylor.
Wow, really humble guy there.
Yeah, no, he's just saying, because we play lead. You don't see us playing the lead. And we're not the stars that you came to watch.
Oh, yeah, gotcha.
You know, so you're watching Keith Richards and Mick Jagger.
And it is true. When you think of the Rolling Stones, the first two people you think of are those two. And the other, you know, I think it was a previous episode where you're talking about, what's the drummer's name?
Charlie Watts,
and maybe punch. Was he? Did he punch Jagger in the face or something?
He did.
It's my band.
Yeah, it was because like they were in the recording studio. Yeah, I remember this because Stern's asked him about, is that true? And he goes, yeah. He goes, we were in the recording studio. He goes, Mick's being Mick, right? He's strutting around like a rooster cock. That's what, how he got that name. You know, he does that, right?
He does good that thing.
Yeah.
You listeners can't see, but Charlie's doing a good one.
And anyway, you know, he goes, Mick turns to Charlie and he tells him, he goes, look, man, he goes, you got to pick up the tempo on this, you know, because this, whatever the reason was, you know, and he goes, somebody please tell my drummer to pick the tempo up and stuff like that, right? Because they're in different, you know, cubicles as they're recording.
My drummer.
Right. He goes, so then. Everybody goes back to their hotel rooms, right? You know, and he goes, and then a knock on the door comes, you know, to Mick Jagger's door. He opens up the door. Charlie Watts is standing there, and he punches him right in the nose.
That's awesome.
And he falls back, and he looks at him, and he goes, what the fuck was that for? And he goes, it's my band. And that's your art and entertainment news.
Keep listening for Downpour's special feature. Ivy Blue's new music on their album 19 goes from nothing to something, defying all their critics. Delivering once again to their fans, they give us a preview in this interview with the president of Just Imagine Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Really privileged, very honored to have back on with us Ivy Blue. We're talking with The Urge, and they have some new music out, and they are from New Zealand, which you all know. And we love your music, and thank you so much for being on again and letting us know all about this.
Thank you for the continued support.
Oh, it is our pleasure, man. Believe me, it is our pleasure. So, talk a little bit about your new album.
19. I think what's done well with this is that we went in with pretty much nothing. We did all the music live. It's all pretty much first take. First tries of the form after writing and rehearsing it a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Vocals are the last thing to be added, and it's sort of 19 has felt what it means to be the age of 19, looking back, growing up, and getting ready for the next part of your life. It's sort of like a reflection within a reflection. Musically, we don't compromise anything about the way we do it, but somehow we're all getting better, which I think is nice. I like that we can go from nothing to something. That's sort of what we do.
You know, I mean, we were having this conversation in the studio not too long ago, and we were talking about, you know, artists and how sometimes there's artists that you guys do all original material, but there's a lot of artists out there that do covers, right?
Yeah.
And we talked to a few bands and said, hey, do you mind when people do your covers? And they go, no. And this dude said, he goes, you know what? He goes, as a matter of fact, I've heard some covers of our music that was better than what we did. And he goes, but I love it because they took the spirit of the song and they just added a little something to it, you know?
When I was at Level Zero writing the lyrics for the album, they do open mics there. And one time they actually had a crack at Forever December and I went, well, you sang it better than I did. And her name was, don't think this is the one who covered it, but I had ended up having a jam with Erin Wells Lakeland, who in turn has actually joined the band on vocals. And we get along great. We sing really well. And the person who did the covers, well, they're really high up in my book because they sang it much better than I did.
I heard you mention something in an interview once about Burma, and you were saying something about, you know, you love to be able to play in Burma, you know, and I...
and I a lot better on Kiwis.
Yeah.
In respect of what's going on in Burma, we're really feeling for them after all the earthquakes and the flooding, which has written it off for now. Because of all the safety and everything that comes with it. So obviously when we do a show, we don't actually want our fans getting hurt at the end of it. So we'd like to get there. We just got to make sure it's safe for us and safe for our fans and followers in Burma to be able to get over there and do it.
Well, you know, I think that would be wonderful. It just gives it more of an adventure type, you know?
Yeah, it is definitely an adventure type. One that we're all trying to learn it and pick out ideas for what we choose to do next.
I'm not really sure what the next thing is going to be, and I don't think anybody really knows until it happens, you know?
We've got a rough idea of what's going to happen next, and we're trying to put that in the process now. We may be over there sooner than you think. We're actually might do something new with Erin just to properly introduce her and not go as the 19th, so we're featuring a new vocalist. We'll probably do something new at the start of next year just to introduce Turin, and then we're planning on touring.
Oh man, I can't wait to see you guys. And you're gonna come to the US then?
The US, let me think. Considering we're trying to do the rest of the world, I think it would be pretty unfair if we skipped over the US. We need promoters first and to make sure we can get it all set up and everything. But we'd like to be down there end of next year, January 2017, as part of the bigger world trip. We'd love to be down there, and we actually are looking at, as part of this, going to Ashland specifically.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because you and the show and all our friends in Ashland always treat us so nicely. So they show us a lot of love on Twitter and all the other things we have. That when we were starting to put together the tentative, where do we want to go, we just thought Ashland had to be on that list before we go to New York, to LA, or things like that. And the good thing about US is that it wouldn't be a stopover like 3 nights in New York or 5 in Vegas or something. We'd be planning to do a whole bunch of shows down there.
Oh, yeah. You know what? That would be so cool. And we would support you so much. We have some nice venues to play here. You are more than welcome to come into our studio. And we would interview you up in the studio and you guys could play. And we'd broadcast it on radio and get a good response. And, you know, we would just eat it up, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah. We'll let you know before the fan club finds out once we know the date for final. But US is on the list towards the rear end.
There you go, and Ashland's right in the middle, because from Ashland you can go to San Francisco, or you can go up to Seattle, or Portland.
Exactly.
Or up to Vancouver, Canada.
Yep.
Vancouver's...
We're looking at our options.
Nice, nice. Well, so, you've got a big tour coming up, you've got this beautiful new album out, 19, and, you know, what else is happening in your life that's, you know, I mean, that's amazing and fascinating?
The band's got into video games. We've started working on Sploder.com, where you can sign up and have access to a module, and we're doing video games that are absolutely free. Fans can access them. We're releasing one in a couple of weeks, actually. And we can do different themes on that, so that's exciting. We know we'll probably do a mini trip somewhere March and May. We know of something major going on in Wellington. We can't reveal the exact details of, but Wellington will definitely be getting a visit. We're all starting to write again. Me and Aaron had a lovely songwriting session the other day, and the new sub is forming up really nicely. It's got a very different tone to it. And other than that, we're just getting on with it. I mean, we were bummed that we had to cancel most of our shows this year for my own sake, but I've actually started coming back a lot better than what it was before I did all the injuries, and all going, and they're expecting me to get 100% complete all clear before the end of the year. So while we've had to put off most of our plans this year, some of which were of yet unannounced, we are actually looking forward to next year and being able to make up for lost time.
Well, you know, we really look forward to that too.
I've been doing physical therapy to get road ready. I've been on strong painkillers, which is why I was technically late, because they've warped my head in and out. And it's actually daylight savings has just started. It either starts tomorrow or it started overnight. So it warped me up big time. And it's been amusing. My sister's had a lot of fun with it. The band have poked fun at it. And it's sort of, we have a running joke now. Well done, Grandpa. But it's been amusing, and now that I'm coming to the end of the treatment, with all the meds and all the physical therapy, it'll take a couple more months to fully heal up and get back to it, but then we're pretty much straight back to business as usual.
You know, that's fantastic, and it's great news for all your fans and around the world there.
There were several who were very worried about that, because with nerves, you don't know whether you're going to get them all back. Thankfully, the prognosis is good.
Well, that's beautiful. And I got to tell you, man, it's been so, so gracious of you to come on so early in the morning there and speak with us. And we are super excited, man, about having you come out to Ashland or anywhere, you know, in the Pacific Northwest. You know, we will come and see you. And we're more than happy to help out any way we can. And we really, really like 19. And we're going to, for everybody out there, you know, we're going to feature it. And we'll have all the links set up so you can go and get the music and enjoy it and get ready to see the Urge in action there. Fully on the mend, as they say. Now, will you be bringing your grandfather with you?
I'm not too sure yet. But we will be bringing, if we do come, we're not going to come and do a half-baked version of the production. We're going to bring the giant Anthony's, and we'll do whatever we're going to do with the backdrop, lighting effects, smoke, snow machine, or whatever. We're going to bring the full production where we can.
That is fantastic news. And for everybody out there, I want you to go onto the Ivy Blue Facebook page, man. Be sure you like them. And, you know, we'll have all the links posted up on Just Imagine It Inc. And it's been so, so just really refreshing talking with you again. And thank you for bringing all that beautiful music to us all the time.
No worries. As long as we're able, we'll keep doing it. No such thing as retirement for us.
All right, then. Okay, so you have a wonderful day there. We're going to get ready for Friday night. You get ready for Saturday. And we'll talk to you again real soon then.
All righty. Take care.
All right. Thank you, mate.
No worries. Bye-bye.
Bye.
To learn more about Ivy Blue, visit us on our website at justimagineitinc.com.
Rap artist 1G is one cool cat living in the Florida Everglades. He hangs out with us and talks about his music in this interview with president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
I really love that guy.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting edition of Get Behind Me Now, Stay There interview. And this interview is really special. It comes to us from Florida, and we're talking to 1G, the great hip-hop rapper. And welcome, 1G.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, so tell me, you got to be pretty excited because I know you have some new music dropping this month, right?
Yeah, September 11th, I got the Faces album coming out. It's exciting. You know, this is my second mixtape. My first mixtape, I pretty much gave it for a free download at tiny.tc/TheOfficial1G.
Okay. And what are you going to do on this one?
Pretty much, this one going on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify.
Wow.
Pretty much all my production. Everything is all me, you know, the beats. I made the beats. I recorded my own track, everything. Like, it's just in-house everything, you know what I mean?
Right. And on the tracks that you have out there, is there a particular one that stands out that you really like the best? Or, I know how sometimes artists are... I like them all. They're all my babies. And then, but there's usually one that you kind of favor, like you favor doing, you know, when you're in concert and things like that.
Yeah, right now I feel good about the Saturday Night Special because I feel like it's more of a club vibe, you know what I mean, to the dudes and the females. It's a good vibe, like as far as, you know what I mean, Saturday Night Special, you know what I mean, the song is what it is. It's this Saturday, you know what I mean, it's going down.
Right, yeah. That's really cool. You know what? For all our listeners out there, let's hear a little bit of that right now.
You know, yeah. It's Saturday time for the night now. We step up in the club life. Everything is on when we in the lights. And you know the joint stuff with the loud pipe. Baby wanna see it, so I let her slide. I'ma give her drive through, she wanna sit inside. We gon' make a scene, then do it live. Sex, drugs, and alcohol on a Saturday night.
Yeah, that is really something. I can see why you like doing that. So where do you get your inspiration for all this?
I pretty much started doing music in high school. I was a DJ first. Then I branched off learning how to make beats when I graduated high school. And I've just been doing beats and, you know what I mean, making my own sound ever since. I just got infatuated, like, with just creating, you know what I mean, music, beats, creating my own beats from start to scratch. And I just took off from there. And I always been, like, you know what I mean, the type to always try to rap because I grew up, you know, in the 80s where rap was, like, real big. So, you know, it's just real hip-hop. I mean, I was born in a good hip-hop era, you know?
Yeah, with the, you know, Ice Cube and Dr. Dre and stuff like that.
Yeah, Ice Cube, Dre, Big Daddy Kane, Black Sheep, you know, all the old group, leaders of the new school, you know, like, a lot of old school rap that I grew up on.
So now, you're from the Caribbean region, and do you ever have any, like, leanings towards reggae or any of that stuff, or you know, mainly hip-hop is your thing?
I have a few... reggae artists that I work with, and I did a few reggae tracks, but not mainly, you know what I mean, reggae. I pretty much keep it versatile with the hip hop, so I do some hip hop on some reggae too, you know what I mean?
Right. So tell us about the process. You know, do you you did all this, you know, in house? So was it something that you worked with, or collaborated with a lot of other musicians, or just something that you where, you know, you did it and just as a standalone?
Yeah, I pretty much do everything myself, you know what I mean? And I got my Ice Cold company with me. You know, they pretty much do all the editing and mixing and stuff sometimes when I don't do it. So I got, you know, another person with me on another team. You know, shout out to Robert Beckford, Reload, you know, my manager.
Right.
He set all this up.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Yeah, he played a big part in a lot, you know, what I got going on right now. We're just trying to see, you know, a different era with our talent.
So, are you going to take this on the road?
Hopefully, yeah, we could start doing some road shows and, you know what I mean, get into a few venues and just try to put ourselves out there and get state to state. We don't want to just stay in our state. We want to you know, coming to your city and everybody else's city.
Yeah, we look forward to that. That'd be great. But I know that in the Miami area has just got, you know, an incredible, you know, hip hop scene going on. You know, there's just so much, you know, it seems like it's almost like a warm New York City. There's so much action going on there.
Yeah, Miami always got to pop more with the music. You know, that's not too far from us. We've located in Fort Lauderdale. That's where we based at. So, you know, Miami got to pop and, you know, we're not too far from there. So, you know, my music will be all over Florida. Miami is one of the, you know what I mean, main places that, you know, you'll hear some of my music too. It's 15 minutes away from Lauderdale, really.
Yeah, you know, I've been to both places, and they're both really, really nice and, you know, conducive to all kinds of different music, you know? There's such a variety there. We just had a pop singer on, Sarah Packerman from Miami, and we talked to her in Berlin. She was on tour. So I know there's really a lot, you know, people in that area just, you know, just love their music, and, you know, and the weather is so nice, you know, that, you know, every day is a summer day, isn't it?
Yeah, the sun always shining good down here, you know, you just got to know how to deal with it.
So when you're writing your songs, is there, you know, any particular influence for you, or, you know, or did it come naturally, or something that, you know, you have to sit down and really, you know, think about?
Yeah, man, I like being in the studio by myself most of the times when I write. You know, I like to take my time and write certain stuff. I don't just go in there and freestyle anything because, you know, I'm not satisfied with anything just coming out the studio. So I just sit there and take my time and write, man. It's just like I take my time and sit there and produce the beat. You know, everything is one-step process until I feel like it's ready.
And how long does it take you to put an album together?
Doing it by myself, man, like I would say this second mixtape took me about a month to really get together.
Wow. I'll tell you what, for the way it sounds, it sounds like, you know, you spent a year on it because it's just really well-crafted. We really enjoy it.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
So what's the name of your album again, and where can people find it now? I know it's going to be on Spotify and iTunes and...
Amazon as well.
On Amazon?
Yeah, you can go to tiny.cc/official1g. To download my first mixtape, if you haven't heard it, you know what I mean? And the second mixtape is called Real Greats Entertainment, Volume 2, Faces. You know it's under the label Real Greats Entertainment and Ice Cold Co-Production. And it will be released on 9/11. You know, you can't forget that date right there. And it's 11 tracks on it, just for 9/11. That's my favorite number, too, so that's why I made it 11.
Well, hey, man, we'll really be looking forward to that. And I know all of our fans out there will be looking forward to it, and your fans as well. We'll post it up there and we'll put all the links there so people can go and download your music and enjoy it. And we, you know, we really look forward to having you come out here to the Great Pacific Northwest, you know, and do some rapping for us, you know?
Yeah, man, I love that. I love that. And I appreciate you, you know, calling me for this interview. Like I say, you know, the mixtape will be out 9/11/15, tiny.cc/official1g for everybody who wanna, you know, get a little taste of the first mixtape and just get into the second mixtape after that because, you know, the first one is fire as well.
There you go. We got volume one. And then now we have volume two. Man, I got to tell you, we're really excited about that. And it's been such an honor to have you on the show, 1G.
Appreciate it. It's all love.
To learn more about 1G, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
Day golly wakwa. Day golly wakwa. Day. Wakwa day gali wakwa.
Black Wave. When John and Jean Silverwood, both experienced sailors, decided to give their four children a taste of life on the high seas, they hoped the trip would offer important learning experiences, not only about the natural world, but about the beauty of human life stripped down to its essence, far from civilization. But the adventure that awaited them would surpass anything they could have imagined. Aboard their 55-foot catamaran, the Silverwood family found its bonds tested as never before as they struggled with family and marriage dynamics in compressed quarters alongside the terrifying forces of nature. In the crucible of the sea, a stronger, tighter unit was forged. Then, just when it seemed that they had mastered every challenge, their world was shattered in a split second of sheer horror. Now the real test begins, forcing them to fight for their very lives. The jaw-dropping true tale of the Silverwood family and their awe-inspiring survival when faced with the most harrowing of events on the high seas is a truly remarkable account. Carrington McDuffie and Joe Barrett bring the story to life, capturing the tense journey down to the slightest detail in these realistic readings. Both performances are earnest and raw, allowing the listeners to ebb and flow with the story as if they were tucked away on the Silverwood's 50-foot catamaran.
John was never afraid of the dark. It had always been his friend. He was most himself, in fact, when far out in space, sailing through the stars, leaning into the great curve of the Milky Way. If you have ever been miles from shore in a small craft on a moonless night, with fathomless water all around you reflecting the stars above, you know what it is like to stand at the wheel and navigate your freefall through the universe. If you are sailing with John, he will remind you that Earth and its companions are traveling through the Milky Way at a certain speed. John knows what it is. And he will tell you that the galaxy itself is traveling at a still greater speed through the diamond field of other galaxies, like glittering gowns spinning around endlessly. He will remind you, as you make your way through the night sea, that you are, in fact, steering a course through the stars. Our galaxy makes the big turns, of course, but you can make some zigs and zags for yourself. And out there on a good sailing night, with the sea gently slapping the bottom of the boat, and the ocean air forever freshening your skin and your senses, you experience a perfection of awareness with each bounce of the sea and every breath of breeze. John always took the late night watch as the children and I slept below. He sailed us through the universe, as I thought he might when I married him nearly 20 years earlier. Many nights on this long journey, he would wake up our little sweet-toothed Jack with the aroma of fresh broken chocolate. We had bought a chestful of 5-pound ingots in Panama, so he would have a few nightly hours in space with his father. Then he would send Jack back to bed, and he would be alone again up there, taking us through the night into the beauty and genius of the real world, unfiltered even by a Cousteau, watching his compass, but like Peter Pan, also his stars, as in, second to the right and straight on till morning. There is a hidden reef ahead somewhere. But isn't there always? We are mortals resigned to that ending. When it arrives so unexpectedly in the night, ready to take not only you, but your children, you will pray aloud for the morning. But it happens. It has happened so many times. So many ships have gone down in the coral, and children have slipped into the dark sea. It had happened before on this very reef, long ago. We were replaying history in an awful way.
McDuffie narrates Jean's story, the loving wife, frustrated spouse, kind and often bemused mother, and always a strong woman trying to protect and love her family even in the most desperate straits. Barrett's gruff voice is perfect for the rugged, handsome John, who can burst into pirate lingo in one moment and describe his near-death experience and his acknowledgement of dependence on his family in another. Together, their narration creates a story that everyone in the family can relate to. John Silverwood lives in California with his wife Jean and their 4 children. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com.
Behind Me Now Stay There is a Just Imagine It Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call us at 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitinc.com. I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
I'm Carson Bench.
And I'm Charlie Stanton, and we like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook, and remember to get behind me.
Now stay there. Shake, baby, smile.